Blog Talk Radio.
Get out to eat. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and Happy New Year. Welcome to Backyard Labrish. It's the first week of the year, and I'm so blessed to be still here in the backyard. And I want to welcome our callers on the board, those listening online, and again give you my sincere, heartfelt thank you for all the support I got last year, and we're just looking forward to a wonderful year in 2011. So welcome, welcome, and Happy New Year. Well, as usual, I'm always excited to share new information as I gather it, and we're continuing to use Dr. Joy Lumsden's wonderful articles on our forefathers, the people before us who just accomplished so much and make us so proud. And I get so inspired, and I really hope that some of this information will be popular with the younger generation, because I believe that if they integrate some of this information into the current curriculum for the young Jamaicans, I know that they will be thrilled, if not right away, when they look back, because we did not have this information available to us when I was in school, or perhaps I'd be more interested in history. So if you're on my list, you know that this evening we're speaking about interesting Jamaicans who were from the 19th century, and we might not have known about them if it was not for Dr. Lumsden's research and piecing together information about these marvelous people. Last week we spoke about some doctors, and I'm sure there are perhaps others who are not yet mentioned, but her work is a work in progress, and she's always finding relevant information. So tonight we'll be talking about educators, school teachers, and clergymen. And for the people who grew up in my generation, we know that most of the schools in Jamaica in the 30s and 40s were church schools. So they're really closely connected. And tonight we're going to be talking about some very trailblazers, as I call them, because I just believe for them to have accomplished so much during that period. I'm talking about, you know, being born in 1831 to 1869, men and a woman in particular that we're going to discuss tonight. But what is really thrilling me most about tonight's broadcast is that one of these gentlemen wrote about himself, which I'm always asking my listeners to think about writing their own stories and to find that Mr. Matthew Joseph did so was very thrilling to me. So the first person I am going to speak about, and these are available on Dr. Joy Lumsden's website, and it's Joyous Jam. And this particular segment was a History Month that she did in 2004. So this information has been online for a long time. I don't know if any of the listeners on the board are familiar with some of these people and these events about them, this information about them. And I'm really curious. So as I mentioned, this is a labrish for the foreigners who might not know what a labrish is. It is getting together, a group of people getting together, or two people getting together to discuss something of interest. It's not necessarily a gossip, but let's call it an exchange of information. And it's usually a very casual thing. So I invite my listeners to participate by joining the labrish, and to do so, you hit 1 on your telephone. That will indicate to me that you are interested in speaking. I will open the mic and you introduce yourself and put your 2 cents in. Because, as usual, I am always reading from somebody else's writing and putting in my sidebar, as I call it. And I invite you to join me with your opinion or your thoughts or suggestions. So I am going to start off, and again, I want to give credit to Dr. Joy Lumsden, who's one of our researchers in Jamaica, and she's always working on several things simultaneously, and I'm always asking and being open to people who would contribute something to what she's doing. And I just want to really, we are all very grateful to all the historians. So let me start off with Matthew Joseph. And he was born in October of 1831 on a coffee plantation in the Blue Mountains called Rose Hill. His grandfather, an Igbo prince, had been brought to Jamaica as a slave about 1780 and died 2 years after emancipation. His father, who had been taught to read by a bookkeeper on the plantation on which he was headman, taught him and his brothers to read. From about 1839 to 1847, he attended the Church Missionary Society School at Woodford, 2 miles from where he lived, and then was fortunate enough to gain a place to be trained as a teacher at the Government Normal School, NORML, recently established near Spanish Town. Remember now, folks, we're talking about 1839. So things apparently had different names then. Here they're talking about the Government Normal School, whatever that means. Now, 18 months later, in July of 1849, he was sent to take charge of Woodford School when the teacher's position became vacant. Several years later, in September of 1856, he was appointed to the head teacher's post at the church school, Trinity Village, Blue Mountain Valley in St. Thomas. Now, I would like to know if anyone knows of those little cities, Trinity Village. I'm not familiar with that part of St. Thomas. Okay. Matthew Joseph was actually in Morant Bay at the time of the rebellion in 1865, but had no sympathy with the rebels. He undertook the sad duty of giving spiritual comfort to some from the area who were summarily executed. From the 1860s, he was writing and publishing poetry locally. In a conventional Victorian style, in 1876, he virtually bankrupted himself by going to London to publish a book of poetry called The Wonders of Creation. The Reverend Robert Gordon, a Jamaican black Anglican clergyman then living in England, wrote an introduction to the work, but it failed to sell well, and Joseph lost his money. Now, here's a verse from a poem written for August 1, 1872. Here, this is the poem I'm reading. Here, though the days of wealth are past, thought off our sky with gloomy clouds o'ercast, freedom's bright, happy air brought pure joy and peace to every heart. The slave disdained his cruel chain. The man has claimed his rights again. He took an interest in politics and was for some time a member of the parochial board of St. Andrew. He died in 1903, having lived to see his son called to the bar at the Middle Temple in London and returned to Jamaica to practice as a barrister. Thomas Bushell Stevenson was born in 1845 in Bethel Town. No, I'm sorry, that's another man I'm reading about. So that is what Dr. Lumsden has written about Matthew Joseph. But at the end of this article, she had his, what he wrote about himself. And I really, really thought that was so exciting to me, because I'm always telling people how important it is to write their own story. So this is his, Matthew Joseph, in his own words, where he was born. This is how he wrote it. The island of Jamaica has been at all times proverbial for its beautiful scenery, especially towards its eastern side. A voyager for the first time approaching this part of the island cannot but be delighted with its green valleys and romantic glides, and with the cloud-capped peaks of the Blue Mountains in the distance. Sailing southward from Morant Bay, the seaports of Port Morant, Morant Bay, and Yalas Bay will successfully be passed. On reaching Plum Point, Kingston, the capital of the island, will appear in view then, will also be seen at a distance, and at an elevation of 4,000 feet above the level of the sea, the canonment of New, C-A-N-T-O-N-M-E-N-T, of Newcastle, the only military station in the island in which white troops are kept. Beyond a ridge of hills on the western side of Newcastle is a broad and beautiful valley containing coffee plantations. On one of these, called Rose Hall, I was born on the 25th of October, 1831. So that was written in his own words. And as Dr. Lumsden always says, you know, that people wrote differently, you know, how they placed words and how they used words are a little strange sometimes. But I am reading again from his words. This is about his childhood. He has ancestry and childhood as the title of this part of his writing. My father was the eldest son of Agolon, a prince of one of the Ebu tribes inhabiting a tract of country nearly bordering on the Gulf of Guinea, who, as he told my father, had been a general in his own land before he was stolen from hence, which was about the year 1780, and brought over the vast Atlantic with many others of his countrymen and countrywomen, and sold as a slave on a plantation in the valley above mentioned. Reflecting often on the high position he had occupied in his native country, he bore the iron yoke of slavery with much uneasiness, and from the turbulent spirit he frequently exhibited, he was always considered by his owner as a dangerous slave. He died at an advanced age 2 years after the emancipation. My father's mother, from whom I received some information respecting the customs and manners of her country, lived much longer. Of my maternal grandparents, as they had died before I was born, I know comparatively nothing. During the period of my childhood, there was no schools in the country districts to which the children of the people of my race could be sent to receive the elements of useful learning. But my father, having been taught to read by a kind bookkeeper on the plantation on which he was headman, endeavored to teach my brothers and myself to read. Books were then scarce. Fleming and Dilworth's spelling books were then by us thought of the highest excellence. After making some progress in these, I was considered by my kind-hearted father so good a scholar that he thought me fit to read the New Testament and an old edition of Guthrie's Geography. These were, for a long time, my whole stock of school books. For 4 years, viz., from 1835 to 1839, my teacher was my beloved father. My school books, those above mentioned, and my school, some shady tree in my father's field, under which I sat learning the lesson he appointed me, to be repeated to him whenever he could conveniently attend to me. I'm sorry, but I get very emotional here. Excuse me. It will then at once be seen that at such a school and by such a mode of tuition, I could make but little progress in learning. Still, I must own that I derived much benefit therefrom. For having been so early thrown, as it were, on my own resources, I then acquired that taste for reading and a habit of reflecting on whatever I read, which have always been of the greatest service to me in endeavoring always to improve my mind. Oh, my God. Oh, dear. In the year 1839, the Church Missionary Society established a mission and school at Woodford, 2 miles distance from my native place. The school I attended for about a year. On my father's leaving that part of the parish to settle in another district, I was taken along with him. And as there were no schools near our new home to which I could be sent, he resorted to his old plan of teaching me himself. Finding that by that way I was making no progress, he sent me to remain with a relative residing near Woodford, by which means I was again enabled to attend that school, and where I received such little instructions as were then given in the country schools generally. As my attendance at school was irregular, having been absent therefrom at times for 6 months together, although I had a thirst for learning, my progress was not satisfactory. In the year 1847, having by some answers in geography, attracted the attention of the Reverend W. Rowe, then curator of Woodford. He promised my father to recommend the Board of Education to send me to the government normal school, then recently established near Spanish Town, to be trained as a teacher. On the 14th of February of the following year, I was admitted as a student into that institution, in which I remained, however, but 18 months, having been sent for by Mr. Rowe to take charge of Woodford School on the mastership of it becoming vacant in July in 1849. After laboring at Woodford for 7 years, in September of 1856, I obtained the more important situation of the mastership of the church school, Trinity Village, Blue Mountain Valley, under the management of the Reverend W. Stern. It was while residing in that place, where nature is seen in all her loveliness and sublimity, that I felt an ardent desire to express in verse and thoughts I had always, from my childhood, so strongly entertained of nature, of nature's God, and of the cruel wrong inflicted on my race. In 1862, I published The Slave and Minor Poems, and 2 years later, Time and Eternity. These little publications, having met with much success, I have been induced and advised to collect all my principal poetic writings and publish them in a single volume. Although conscious of many shortcomings, I may be pardoned in saying that I look back with some degree of satisfaction on the 25 years I have spent in endeavoring to instruct in useful learning hundreds of the rising generation of my native land. And I have further the pleasing satisfaction in knowing that by divine aid, many of those who in years past were under my tuition have now become useful, intelligent, and respectable members of society. Now, this is his last sentence about paragraph he wrote about himself, Matthew Joseph and some of his opinions. And here, I may observe in passing that many have asserted that the Negroes have but little desire for intellectual improvement. Had these persons who hold this cruel and erroneous opinion known the many strenuous efforts made by my father, laboring under difficulties to instruct his children through his own acquired were extremely limited, they would have greatly qualified their assertions. No unjust and so unfounded. So unjust and so unfounded. The love of knowledge is particular to no particular race or nation. It is a principle implanted in every human breast for the noblest purpose by the all-wise Creator. The presence or absence of noble incentives are the chief cause why some nations are found in the van of human progress, and others, after reaching a certain height in civilization, relapse again to a state of barbarism. Oh my gosh. At this point, I would like some input from the board. I see we have callers from 673-718-631-301-404. Quite a few callers on the board. And I tell you, after I read this, I glanced through what this man wrote in 18 whatever. I mean, and I think of, I as I always say, the obstacles that the people who lived in that period, men and women, had to overcome to accomplish whatever they wanted to. It was so great that I just don't have any words for the now generation that would complain that anything is so hard and difficult. It's just a joke. When I look back and I read and find out that the people of so long ago were so passionate about their learning and the importance of getting an education. Now, here's this man with a father that was taught to read by a kind bookkeeper on the plantation where he was. And he was diligent in teaching his children to read. And this man, incidentally, I'll read something else. He had a son that ended up being a barrister. So, So, do I have any input from callers on the board? Remember, this is elaborate. Before I go to the next person of interest, just hit one on your telephone to join the elaborate. And at this point, I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Elaborate. Our objective is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And tonight, and for the next, as we did last week, I consider this our enlightening part of the segments, where I just research something of that may be of interest to the listeners. I am never sure whether this is the kind of material that people want to lavish about, but I can tell you that this gives me a lot of inspiration. And I'm hoping that especially the younger generation will take, you know, some points from these people who lived so long ago and who really contributed so much to our culture, our island, and the world. And I think these stories are wonderful. And to know that this man wrote so much about himself and his thoughts during that period. And I just thank Dr. Lumsden for just uncovering, discovering, digging up all of this information. And judging by the names of some of these people, I'm sure that some of their, you know, their generations are their people related to these people. And it would be interesting to know if they have additional stories or if they're even familiar with these stories about, you know, their generations way back. So do I have any input from the callers that are listening online? And for those of you listening on your computers, then in order to interact with me, there's a number right on your screen there that you can call in if you are close to a phone. So I don't see any hands going up. So let me tell you a little bit about before and more about this particular gentleman. And incidentally, Dr. Lumsden has wonderful photographs of everyone, so you can actually see what these people looked like. Some of them are not very clear, but I mean, I think she just did a marvelous job. There's one in particular that looked like it was a drawing. I don't know where she's on discovering these things from. But here's what was also written on her site about this particular Mr. Matthews. I got a little emotional reading about him because, you know, it's so deep. So this was something, an article she read, I suppose, when he died. By the death of Matthew Joseph, there has departed an honored member of the teaching profession and a man who was a credit to the Negro race. I met him once in Kingston in the year of 93. Is that 93? And his form still lives in my memory. Must be 83. I don't know what year that was. It says 93, but it doesn't look right. Matthew Davis was born at Rose Hill, October 1831, of slave parents, and was taught by his father to read the New Testament in spite of the many difficulties inseparable from the system of slavery. Subsequently, he was sent to Woodford School and hence the government school at Spanish Town in 1848. He took charge of Woodford School in 1849, where he remained for several years, and then went to Trinityville in 1856. Hence, he wrote The Slave, published in 1862, and Time and Eternity, published in 1864. He was for some time master of the Chapelton School in Clarendon. Encouraged by friends and well wishes, he collected all his poetic writings into a book form and visited England for the purpose of arranging business with his publishers. The preface was written by the Reverend Robert Gordon, for some time master of the Woolmer's Grammar School, then residing in England. His longest poem is The Wonder of Creation. Mr. Joseph took an interest in home politics and was for some time a member of the parochial board of St. Andrew. It is to be hoped that at the conference of JUT for 1902, the executive will pass a resolution in connection with his death. Although he is only a Jamaican, he merits it, being one of those of whom we may be justly proud. Think not a strife, though it small appears. Small sands make all mountains, moments make the years, and trifle life. That is some poem that is being quoted. The life of Joseph is certainly inspiring. True, he was no genius, yet still, if we look at the obstacles he had to overcome to attain to the position he secured, he's nothing if not extraordinary. And yet, there are a dwindling few, thank heavens, who speak of the inherent ability of the Negro race. I am always quick to recognize, worth, and worship the man. the hero. But if ever there can be a brighter glow in my breast, it is when I contemplate the success, however small, of one belonging to the African race. And this was written by young liberal in the Jamaican Times of 1901. So Dr. Lumsden got that article about this great man from that, from the, I suppose, the Jamaican Times. And it's on her website. So that is the first person, I think he's the only one that wrote about himself. And I hope that the listeners on the board enjoyed it as much as I did, because I find so much inspiration when I read about these people. So let's talk about Thomas Burchell Stevenson, and this is S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S-O-N. He was born in 1845 in Bethel Town into a family who were loyal and devoted members of the Baptist Church. And he was named after one of the great Baptist missionaries who had been in the heart of the struggle for emancipation. By the age of 20, he had become a teacher, having posted in St. Elizabeth and Westmoreland before being called in 1882 to take charge of the middle school connected to the Calabar College, which was then on East Queen Street, adjacent to the Baptist Church. He remained at Calabar School for 26 consecutive years of his working life, giving their early training to hundreds who became useful citizens in the island and abroad. Mr. Stevenson was a deacon and the treasurer of the church for 25 years. He had an excellent voice and was for many years choir master, training an outstanding choir. He was a trustee of the church and for 20 years superintendent of the Sunday school. He and his wife lived just around the corner from the church at number 2 Sutton Church. I wonder if it was Sutton Street, but it says Sutton Church. He was an ardent supporter of the Baptist Missionary Society and at various times members of the managing committee, business manager, and auditor of the society's monthly report. He was a founding member of the Jamaican Union of Teachers and was twice elected president. He was member of the Board of Education for 3 years, and in the last year of his life was on the Board of Trustees of Woolmer's School. After his retirement in 1909, he stood for election to the Kingston City Council and was later elected for a second term. Alexander Dixon, who served on the council with him, said he was a man who lived to satisfy all classes of the community. At the time of his death, after a brief illness in July of 1930, he was remembered for his hard and successful work as a teacher. His integrity and dignity and the high esteem in which he was held by all classes of the community. His funeral at the East Queen Street Baptist Church and the Maypen Cemetery was one of the largest that the city has seen for many years. You know, as I read about these people and the pride they took at being teachers or ministers or whatever, I am wondering and hoping that individuals, when they take on a discipline like a teacher or whatever they're giving to the society or serving in whatever, if they really take it to heart how important, especially teachers, are to the students, that they are so important. And when we read how people write about these men of the past, men and women of the past, I am hoping that people, children now, young people who are going into professions like being a teacher will really realize how they can impact hundreds of people. You know, there's a commercial now about nurses. I forgot who puts it on. But they talk about a nurse is delivering a baby here, and they're doing something there, and they're doing something, you know, someplace else, like they're in five places all at the same time. Not in one person, but because of one person, the teacher who taught them their skills. So, you know, here we're reading all about this. And these people took so much pride and were so passionate about what they did in the old days. You know, we know that we, the seniors of Jamaica, know how well respected someone in the teaching position was and how dedicated they were to the success of the students. And I'm hoping that the teachers of today will really take that to heart and realize how they can impact the lives of a whole nation, a whole race, a whole group of people. So with that said, again, I'm inviting members, listeners online to hit one on their telephone whenever they want to join the Labrish. I don't want to just be reading to you. Sometimes I'm wondering if I'm boring, but I see that people, listeners are still listening. So I will go on with the next person of interest. And remember, as Dr. Lumsden mentions on her website, which is Joyous Jam, just Google Dr. Joy Lumsden and you will find all her pages. And she writes about different things. Tonight we're just featuring a segment she did on history. And her title of this segment is just as I quoted in my promo, "It's Interesting Jamaicans You Might Not Know About." So I am hoping that my introduction to them will be, you know, something that you can use with your children, your grandchildren, or feel free to tell someone else who may be interested in history to come by and listen to the shows, because they're all archived, so they might not be here tonight, might not be listening online or calling in, but they can access this particular segment at any time. And I always encourage people, I know everybody's busy and we all need more hours in the day, but you can always send them the address, just copy and paste, or send them to Blog Talk Radio, and if they search for Backyard Labrish, they will get to all the shows are archived, and they can pick out the ones that they want to hear. So nobody's putting up their hands, so I'm going to go on to Alfred Lawrence Walcott, Walcott. And, oh, I see a hand. So before I talk about Mr. Walcott, I'm going to open up the mic to 631-451. Good evening, this is Margaret. Welcome to the Labrish. Who do I have?
Good evening, Margaret. This is Janine from Long Island.
Well, welcome to the Labrish, Janine. How are you today? Happy
Fine,
New Year.
Thanks. Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you.
I'm here listening to all that you're saying, and it's very interesting to know that these things did happen, you know, in the 18th century. Something I didn't
well,
know.
Well,
I'm
wondering how come we never know about these poems that were written. This man wrote a whole book.
I know.
I mean, he had several poems. I never heard of him.
It's the first I'm hearing it myself.
And I wonder if there has been any thought among the educators now of integrating any of this wonderful history that we have about Jamaicans, you know, born and raised on the island, that really contributed
so much
to their communities.
Right.
I think even the people living in the parts where these people were born or worked, you know, they need to know about them. So I'm always advocating for that, and I'm hoping that, that perhaps even after I'm gone, somebody will perhaps think it's a good idea and try to put some of that in the history, even as an extra, you know, not necessarily it might not fit into their examinations or what. I don't know how the system goes now.
Right.
But I think that this is interesting information that could help the current students, you know, get more centered and take more pride
right.
in their country, themselves, the area they live. And I am just curious that they are, I'm just thinking that there might be people with these names that are somehow related to these great people, and they might just want us to start a search to see what their connection may be.
Right.
So thank you for being part of the library, Janine.
You're welcome.
And I really appreciate you and hope you will continue to listen. So I'm going to talk about Mr. Alfred Lawrence Walcott now. And he was born in Manchester in October of 1859. His mother came from Trelawney, and his father was from St. James. He was educated at St. Andrews, Albert Town in Trelawney. It says St. Andrews. I don't know if that was a school. And by the Reverend C.C. Douce, D-O-U-C-E, who was one of the earliest black Anglican clergymen in Jamaica. His teachers recognized his ability, and he made rapid progress. His teacher introduced him to prepare himself, encouraged him to prepare himself for the teaching profession. In January of 1875, he entered the government's training college at Stony Hill, which was moved to Spanish Town in the summer of 1876. This is the same school we talked about before,
right?
Where it was administered by Bishop C. Doute, D-O-U-E-T, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, as a superintendent. His ability and good conduct led him being chosen to take the place of the headmaster of the model school whenever he was absent or indisposed. So he taught for the headmaster, or took over the headmaster's position whenever he was not available.
Right.
Having successfully completed his course in Spanish Town, he spent a year as headmaster of Myers Field School in Westmoreland. In September of 1879, he returned to Spanish Town to take up the post of assistant master at the training college. Later, the headmaster of Titchfield School, he was one of the students at the college at the time, many of whom later had distinguished careers. Yeah, a lot of important people came out of Titchfield. And this is a sidebar. I remember going there to camp, a YWCA camp, you know, in the perhaps late 40s, early 50s.
Yes.
Anyway, in 1881, he was appointed to the mission station in St. James. Huh. Then he acted as C-A-T-E-C-H-I-S-T,
yes,
conducted the day school, and gave occasional help at St. Thomas Church in Stewart Town. In August of 1882, the Archbishop Nuttall appointed him to West Branch School in Kingston, where he spent the rest of his distinguished teaching career. Now, it seems like, this is my sidebar, there were a lot of different schools that, well, I'm not from these parts of the country, but I never heard of some of these schools, Mission Station in St. James, and Gibraltar in St. Anne. So back to the article. Under the leadership of teacher Walcott, West Branch School and the Anglican Church of All Saints on West Street, south of the public hospital, he grew and flourished. The school became, if not the foremost, one of the foremost schools in the island. It provided an excellent start in life for pupils from all over the island and from Panama, many of them achieving distinction in their subsequent careers. Walcott was especially keen to provide a good education for girls. Now, it's funny how they should mention that, because in some of her comments,
yes,
Dr. Lonzen mentioned how, you know, in the early days, women were not recognized as being able to or encouraged to become anything but, I suppose, whatever they did at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But late in the 18-somethings, they were really entering the teaching profession and, you know, different disciplines.
Right.
But this particular man it mentioned here, Mr. Walcott, he was keen about providing a good education for girls. So my point is, even when things are not popular, there are people who will recognize the importance, you know, and take an interest in something that they think is right.
Yes.
And I find all these, I try to find all these little nuggets in these stories. Now, in his work for Jamaica's youth at West Branch, he led to people describing him as a Booker T. Washington of Jamaica. He was often urged to train for the Anglican priesthood, but he preferred to continue as a teacher and to give his service to advance the development of All Saints Church.
Yes.
He was a founding member of the Jamaica Union of Teachers and its president in 1900. Governor Blake appointed him to the Board of Education, the first elementary school teacher to serve as a member on that board. At his death in 1919, he was remembered as a modest man who gave his all to his beloved vocation, teaching.
Oh.
Ah, I'm telling you, it is so inspiring,
yeah,
when you read or hear of someone who gave their all to their chosen profession. You
what
know,
what I can't understand, though, why wasn't all this brought to our attention in our time?
Well, I don't know. I don't have the answer for that. But I am just so happy that I made my decision that, and I'd just like to tell my quick story to my listeners on the board or who may come by later, that I was inspired to do this because I took a trip to Europe. I visited Madrid. I stayed in a bed and breakfast. I happened to stay in the home of an older couple.
Yeah.
And I was so impressed, number one, by how their children and their grandchildren and great-grandchildren were so deeply steeped in their traditions. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The city, I encourage people, if they can't, take a visit to Madrid. It is such an interesting city. And, you know, it has to do with Jamaica because we were owned by the Spanish at first.
But right.
So many things are retained from way back. Their centers, their statues, their art. And a lot of the average people,
yeah,
really practice a lot of the old traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So I happened to go online, and they were very techie. They were online. They were in their 70s, and they taught me a lot about the Internet. They really did. For the couple of days I was there, I was very intrigued. I think we were there for about a week, or a little under a week. And I could not believe how these mature people, you know, because I have never visited. This was my first trip to Europe.
Right.
And I just never thought of people in their 70s in a foreign country being so into the Internet and so on top of things and all of that. So it was like an eye-opener for me.
Mm-hmm.
While I was there, I went online to see if there was some information about how my period of growing up in Jamaica. And there was not anything much that I couldn't find anything. There was a lot of current information. And people were blogging a lot. And there was, I at that time, I didn't even stumble on Dr. Lumsden pages at that time. But I said, you know, I don't see any information about the 40s, 50s.
Right.
I left Jamaica in 1959. I said, why isn't there any information? I can't find anything.
Yeah.
So that's when I made up my mind that I, well, long ago I had the idea of starting some sort of communication, which would be a library. So that's when I really got inspired, because I have three precious grandsons. All of my children were born right here in America. You know, I call them Jamaicans.
Right.
And they don't really know much about the way I grew up and their father. So
yeah.
So I thought that, you know, I need to have my grandchildren be able to, and they're now busy with trying to raise their families. They don't have time to talk to me. So
yeah.
I figure, how are they, my grandchildren, going to know? I know that when my children get older, they might be as interested as I am now, because I wish I could get some information from my mother now. I really do.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden I'm very interesting. Interested. So, but she's not here anymore with me. So I thought I would use this medium, the internet, the cyberspace, especially the fact that I had a lot of artifacts, a lot of things that my mother was a collector. She had done recordings. She wrote poems. I had them. And I had a house fire, and I lost everything. And it's during that period when I was out of my house, you know, sort of recuperating from all of that I took this trip to Europe. So I was then inspired to have a living legacy, leave a living legacy someplace. And I know it couldn't be written down, because it can be destroyed by a fire. It can be destroyed by a flood. It can just get lost. So I said, what better place than the internet?
Right.
So that's how this whole show was born. That's how it was born. Mm. And I came back, and I was encouraged by a friend that she's now my friend, but I was meeting her for the first time, and I told her I had this idea of trying to get information from other seniors about where they grew up in Jamaica, what life was like, and that kind of thing. And then she said, well, are you going to do something for independence? And I must confess, because I left long before independence, I didn't even know when it was. So
yeah.
I said, when is that? And she said, like in about 2 weeks or 3 weeks. It was really soon.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, well, I'm not really quite ready. And she really encouraged me. She said, I think it's a great idea. Why don't you get ready?
Yeah.
And so I was forced to do it. And that's how Backyard Labrish was started. That's really how it was started. And I have had a ride of my life. I think that it has made me healthier. I love doing the research. And then I've discovered all of these historians. Now, I am not saying that the information perhaps was not there. Some of this I don't really know when it started, but online I'm talking. But it's like I know that perhaps some of the listeners on the board might not have heard of Dr. Joy Lumsden, or not have heard of some of the other historians that I talk about and use their material. And even though it's online, perhaps if I was still raising my children or in another phase of my life, I wouldn't have the time to do the research. You know, so since I'm retired and I have the time, I have dedicated my spare time to doing this, and I must say that I've been encouraged by the support I get from you and other people who call in and write in. I am just so grateful and so thankful. And at this point, I want to remind our listeners that this is Backyard Labrish, and it's hosted by Blog Talk Radio. We're here each week at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And although I am retired now, I'm not planning to go back to Jamaica to retire, but I still love Jamaica and love the fact that I was born and raised there.
Amen.
So, and I want my children, my grandchildren, to be proud of that. I want them to know about where they come from and what things was like in my time
right.
and before my time.
I think
it is, and I know that it might take a long time before they become interested, but it's not just for them, it's for anybody
mm-hmm.
that love history. And I call myself bringing these stories to life because I know a lot of people don't have the time to read. A lot of people don't like to read. Not that I like it, too. You know, I'm fumbling through all of this a lot of times. I was never a great speller. So, and then I must tell my listeners that I'm a senior, and I have challenged eyesight, among other things. So sometimes I can't even make out the words. I can't make out the letters, but I'm just going right along because this is a lavish. It's not a debate. I don't have to be politically correct. And I am just here having fun with researching my past and just celebrating it. So with that said, I'm going to talk about a woman. You know, last week with the doctors, remember, there was
yes.
one female. This week with the men, there's another female, and her name is Isabel Burris, B-U-R-R-I-S, and she was born in Four Paths, Clarendon, in 1865. She was the eldest of six children of Thomas Brown and his wife. It was a talented family. Her brother John trained in the USA and Britain to become a doctor, and her brother Tom graduated with honors from Clark University. She was taught by her father until 1884, then spent 3 years at Westwood High School, which was then Manchester Girls' School. She became a member of the school staff until 1889. For some time, she lived with her uncle, the Reverend W.N. Brown, at Salter's Hill in St. James, and was headmistress of a private school at Moor Park. Next, she returned to Chapelton and taught a private school of her own. Her desire to be active in mission work developed as early as the age of 12. She became a good student of the Bible and delighted in teaching it. In 1895, the Bishop of Sierra Leone had visited Jamaica and appealed for missionaries of African ancestry to go to West Africa from Jamaica. In 1896, Isabel married William Burris, who had been studying for missionary work at Carrington College in Barbados, and went with him along with AFO and met with him along with AFO March and J. Walron to the Rio Bongas, B-O-N-G-A-S, an area adjacent to Sierra Leone, which was claimed by the French. They were the first contingent of Anglican missionaries from Jamaica to West Africa. William Burris was ordained to the Anglican priesthood in 1902 in Sierra Leone, and he and his wife worked to spread the gospel. Mm-hmm. Their reports of their work were printed in the local press, and in 1910 they returned to Forlong and toured Jamaica, giving talks about their work and the need for missionaries. Sadly, shortly after they left, Isabel's brother, John, who was practicing as a doctor in St. Mary, was washed away and drowned
oh.
by a flood river while returning from visiting a patient at Albion Mountain. The Burrises had three children, two girls, the elder named Hilda, and one son, Willie, named after his father. They spent their early years in West Africa, but later were sent to school in England. These are the children they're talking about.
Right.
Causing the sadness of separation within the family. The Reverend and Mrs. Boris ran the mission in the rear pond grass until 1925, when they returned to Jamaica. William Boris died in 1940, but no further information about Isabel later years have so far come to hand. So that is the story of that particular woman, Isabel.
Right.
So, you know, I did a story some time ago about women. There were three or four different women who left Jamaica and went to Africa as missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we don't really think about that as perhaps it really was a big deal when you think of them traveling.
That's
just think
hard.
About it.
Yeah.
Even the voyage from Jamaica to Africa in those days, I'm talking 18-something,
yeah.
when the boats didn't go that far. It's not like a cruise ship.
Exactly.
And you can imagine a woman
on
that ship for so long going to a foreign country that she knows nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I find that it takes a very strong person,
yeah.
you know, with real drive and passion and tenacity to, and these people were young, you know, because people didn't live as long as me, you know, in those days. 40 and 50 was considered old.
Yes.
Here I am, almost 76, and just frogging right along. So I was quite thrilled to have a woman in the mix of all of this.
Yes.
So that was, and they told, I told you a little bit about her husband, you know, being, that's how she got to Africa, I suppose, because of him.
Right.
So,
that's a lot of spunk.
You know, that's right. So now the next person I am going to tell you about is another Mr. Brown.
That's his a popular name too.
Yeah. And, you know, I was a Brown before I became a Marshall. So who knows, I might be, my
related?
Father might be related
yes.
to one of these people.
Yes, it's possible.
His name was Thired. It's a very unusual name. Thired. Thired Brown was a black Jamaican who had an extremely interesting career both in Jamaica and the United States. He came from a highly respected family in St. James and showed every prospect of having a successful career in the civil service. But by 1910, he had made the decision to go to the United States to study theology and be ordained into the Unitarian Church. Since his early teens, he had rejected the mainstream churches and decided that only Unitarianism represented his religious beliefs. He returned to Jamaica in 1912 and tried for 8 years to establish a Unitarian church in Jamaica. The American Unitarians were oblivious about their efforts and only gave him limited and grounding support, G-R-U-D, grudging support, I suppose. During those years, he was also involved in many other organizations in Jamaica, including the Jamaica League and the UNIA. Now, his relationship with Garvey was always uneasy, and later he was a staunch opponent of the Garvey movement.
Hmm.
By 1920, he was unable to continue his mission in Jamaica and decided to go to Harlem to set up a Unitarian church there.
Yes.
I know, it was very interesting. Brown's church in Harlem never had a large membership, and he continued to have serious difficulties in his relationship with the Unitarian Church authorities. However, the church was an important center for debate on current issues in the community, and Brown along with other West Indians, were a strong voice for progressive opinion. He was, in fact, one of the founding members of the Jamaican Progressive League, and for some 20 years, its secretary. He represented the league before the Moyne Commission in 1938. He also became an important supporter and fundraiser for the PNP in the United States. Mm-hmm. He worked closely with Norman Manley and visited Jamaica in the summer of 1952 in the aftermath of the expulsion of four leading left-wingers. When he died in 1956, appreciation for his work was expressed in obituaries in the local papers. So, you know, this was a man who took the other path, mm-hmm. because in those days, I am sure that Unitarianism was not very popular at
was
all,
at
anywhere.
Yes.
In anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Harlem to do his thing. So when I talk about people who will just go through any obstacles, overcome what they need to overcome to do what they feel they should be doing. And whether we agree with them or not, we have to really look into how determination can really get you where you want to go.
You want to be.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, his brother, who was Walter, was an Anglican minister. So, you know, Unitarianism is totally different from the traditional religion.
Right.
The brother worked in the missions in West Africa in the early 1900s. In 1920, he was appointed to the Church of All Saints, to which, West Branch School was connected. This is this man's brother.
Right.
Was later made a canon of his religion or the church.
Oh, okay.
So even in those days, in one family, you could have, you know, even though both of them were supposedly in religious disciplines, there were in opposites.
Yes, they were different.
Right. Now, I just find it how much a lot of the people of the past, you know, because we are all humans, a lot of that is still happening now.
Yes.
You know, you just like how in one family you'll have people who have two brothers, or in the family people, one person belonged to one political party, the other person belonged to another party.
Yes.
So here he was, you know, going off a different road. So, excuse me. Now we're going to, how much time do we have left? Okay. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. Tonight we're talking about Jamaicans who you might not have heard of, and they were brought to our attention by Dr. Joy Lumsden. You can Google Dr. Lumsden's pages online, and she has information on Jamaica from the period. She goes way back, and she has all different on plants, animals, people, just a lot of interesting stuff. So let's talk now about Mr. Isaac Newton Duhaney Gordon. He has a long name, three different names, and they all sound like last names, but I suppose Gordon is the last name, I'm assuming him. He has a Duhaney Gordon. Was born in Poolside, Hanover in 1867. He was the seventh child of George and Francis Gordon. His father, who was an ardent worker for the Presbyterian Church, died when Isaac was only a year old. His mother, now just remember, keep in mind how many children this woman has. Seven.
Mm-hmm. Seven.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
His mother, Francine, was a typical, strong, and determined Jamaican woman who ensured that her son got a good education, hoping that he would later enter the ministry of the Presbyterian Church. He and his siblings received their schooling from Mr. Joseph Shaw, who had been a student at the famous Montego Bay Academy. When his early schooling was finished, Isaac decided to apprentice himself to the joiner in Falmouth, but by 1877, to his mother's delight, he had decided to resume his academic studies and was accepted at the Michael College, where he excelled. While studying at Michael, Isaac used his holidays and Saturdays to learn Greek from a Presbyterian minister in Kingston. He also assisted with the work of the St. Andrew's Kirk and of a ragged school, R-A-G-G-E-D, in the southeast of the city. After completing his course at Michael, he taught for 4 years, first at Academy Hall in Montego Bay, and then at Irwin's of Caymanas, where he taught many students who later went on to hold good positions in various professions. He next entered the Theological Hall at 82 Duke Street to continue his studies for the ministry under the guidance of the eminent clergyman, Dr. Robb. While studying, he continued his work for the church, being especially involved in the mission's effort in Denham Town. In 1889, he completed his studies and received his license to preach. I didn't know he had to have a license then.
Yeah.
He received a call from the congregation at Cedar Valley in St. Catherine, where he was ordained on November 20th, 1899. He served there for many years. After serving in Hampstead in St. Mary, he was moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Jamaica in 1910. He participated in an evangelism campaign in New York, where he preached to thousands in a tent on the east side. Most people in the audience were white, and it was reported that at least 100 professed conversion. I suppose that is at the altar call,
yes,
when you call them up to be saved.
Yes.
He was a great supporter of the temperance movement, helping to establish good temple lodges across the island. He was also involved in the Christian Endeavor movement and attended their great convention in Baltimore. He was a member of the St. Catherine Parochial Board and took a special interest in the development of agriculture in the parish. Now, that's the end of the article on him. And as you notice, I mentioned, the only person who wrote about himself was the first one I wrote about. Right. All of these people, she has gotten this information from, you know, the newspaper and wherever she can find it, and it can be verified. And
right,
she put stories together about these people. So I am sure, I'm wondering if some of these places, can you imagine what is, I don't know what is referred to as the ragged school in southeast of the city. And we're talking about Kingston.
Yes, I don't know what that means.
Ragged, R-A-G-G-E-D. Interesting.
Yes.
So, Augustus Cole is our last person we're going to discuss this evening. And he was one of a group of black Anglican clergy ordained by Archbishop Nuttall in the late 19th century. Others in this group were Reverend C.L. Barnes, C.C. Douche, D-O-U-C-E, Douche, while the Reverend R. Taylor and T. Banbury had been ordained earlier. So far, no pictures or photographs of these others have come to hand. Dr. Lumsden loved to post pictures, and she mentions in some of her comments that because during this period, you know, in the, right after emancipation, or it was, I would say, not politically correct, as we would use that term now, to refer to a person in Jamaica at the time as being white, black,
yes,
or colored. You just referred to their name, but you would never describe them as black, mulatto, or whatever. You would
just say Jamaican.
They are. Mm-hmm. So she likes to post the pictures when she talks about people because then you can see what they look like if she can find the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to Augustus Cole. He was born in Kingston in 1851. As a young man, he trained in foundry work, starting out at the West End Foundry of the extraordinary Charles P. Lazarus. While he worked in various foundries, he continued to study, especially theology. From 1875, he worked as a teacher of the Anglican Church, serving in St. Catherine, St. Anne, and Portland. In 1886, he entered the Theological College and was ordained deacon in 1888. In subsequent years, he served in various churches, chiefly in St. Thomas and Portland, finally being appointed by Archbishop Nuttall to St. David's in Yalas in 1897. In 1899, he resigned from the deacon and went on a tour of the United States, during which, I'm talking 1899, you know, that this Mr. Cole is touring the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if people realize what times we're talking about. And these are black Jamaicans. I suppose it's politically okay to say that now.
Yes.
I mean, they're very dark complexion men. And we're saying now he's touring. He went on a tour of the United States, during which he preached in many of the biggest churches there. And filled temporary appointments in several states. He was called to the Port Union, Episcopalian Church in Costa Rica, but declined the position so as to be able to return to Yalas, where he was offered again. He worked and raised up the church from the ruins, justifying the words of the archbishop. There was hardly another man besides Mr. Cole that I could send there to build up the church, and how well he materialized my hope.
Isn't that something?
The Reverend Augustus Cole was known as one of the best preachers of the Anglican Church in Jamaica, and his efforts were not confined to the service of the church alone. He did much, excuse me while I turn the page, he did much to develop the agricultural resources of the district and also worked in the cause of education. He was appointed a Justice of the Peace in 1921. Declining health forced him to resign from St. David's in that same year after 20 years of service as an Anglican priest. He was married in 1878 and had 5 children, 2 daughters and 3 sons. So I have no doubt that Mr. Cole has some family that may be alive and well today, great-grandchildren or who knows what generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that by chance they might come by and they possibly have the history of their grandfather or whatever the line may be that they're related to them. But I hope that if they have not discovered about him, they will find some of this information that will in somehow touch them and help them to be more productive and more proud of their roots.
Yes.
So as I go through this research, I am really, really just enchanted by how so many Jamaicans from those times would just take off and go to a foreign country, you know, bold and brave.
Brave. Mm-hmm.
Doing whatever their passion was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with little but with talawa.
Amen.
And with that said, I would like to invite callers on the board if you'd like to make a comment about tonight's broadcast. Please hit 1 on your telephone. I'd be more than happy to open up the mic and welcome you to the world. So, do I have any takers? Okay, I guess not. But I want to tell you all how much I appreciate you for being here. I hope you have enjoyed discovering all these wonderful people. I know they certainly make me proud. And I hope that there will be some encouragement for the next generation. And I want to encourage all the listeners that are listening now or may come by later of the importance of writing your own story. If you have an elder in your family or a senior in your family, encourage them to write their own story so that somebody else does not have to write it for them. Because no matter how we think we don't have an interesting story, we all do. Here we had one of our featured person tonight giving his thoughts about what other people thought about education, you know, where they think it was not important. And here he's saying that the quest for knowledge is a gift from God or the Creator or whatever you call your higher power. And it's given to every race. That is where it says all men are created equal. We all have the same or similar desires. You know, it's what fuel our quest for what we want from life that is important. And I always feel, you know, that we are so strong as human beings. But I could only talk about, you know, Jamaica because that's where I'm from and growing up there. That I am just so inspired when I read and find out about these people long before me that showed so much strength and passion for what they did. And it was always something that could benefit not just their community and the people around them, because as some of them mentioned, you know, they felt good about being able to educate hundreds of people that went on to be productive in the community. And I am sure that has trickled down to even now, you know, people who are here with us now. So I hope that the younger generation will take some strength from that. And know that you can overcome any obstacle that is put in your way.
Yep.
So with that said, Jane,
yes,
we have 5 seconds. I want to thank you for participating.
You're welcome.
And joining the Labrish. I want to thank all the callers on the board and those listening online for their support and help and just being there. I want to encourage you to send the link out to some of your friends that might have an interest. And if you know any of these names, Dr. Lumsden is always looking for information about what she's bringing to light. So check out her website and send her an email. And do the same at www.backyardlavish.com. And we'll be updating the site with some information on this as soon as I can. So hang in there with me. Thank you for coming. Come often. And I look forward to seeing you next week. So with that said, Janine,
Yeah.
We are here each week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica.
Land we love. Amen.
So with that said, I want to say good night and make it a great week.
Good
night. See you next time.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye. God bless.
Good night. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.